Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
It's the worst week for markets in months. The global pandemic worries causing risk off. January ends with bond prices surging and yields plummeting. And we have a pretty good listener question today. All this and much more on episode number 647 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And welcome to this week's episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm Andrew Horowitz, and I'm your host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, founder of Horowitz & Company, investment advisory, money management. We do some financial planning as well. I'm also the co-host of DH Unplugged, where myself and John C. Dvorak get together each and every week, although we were off last week. But we talk about some of the stranger parts of financial news and investments and play a bunch of games with our listeners. A lot of fun Tuesday nights, live 9 o'clock. And of course, you can grab that also at any of your favorite podcast directory places or wherever you get your stuff there. So I spent a few days in Virginia this week, and I was actually in Washington, D.C. as well for some client meetings. And, you know, with all the concerns about what's going on with this global pandemic, this flu, this virus, I wasn't taking any chances. So I was that guy. I was that guy. I went on Amazon before my trip and I decided, you know what? I'm going to look for some masks because I oftentimes seem to go on a flight somewhere and I come back and I feel a little bit of a sniffle or cold coming on. And, you know, I'm not willing to do it anymore. And especially with all that's going on that maybe I thought it'd be a good idea. So I did some searching for a high filtration score and tried to find one that would not be too ridiculous looking at the same time. And I wore it actually both ways on the plane. And even though, you know, just we're starting to see more and more people wearing masks. If you ever travel outside the U.S. especially, and if you're ever in Asia, it's commonplace. I mean, in Vietnam, everybody wears masks. They have these. As a matter of fact, if you're in Vietnam, people are riding on their little scooters with matching helmets and masks. So I thought, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe some people will start giving me some looks and wondering, you know, who's that guy? What's he wearing the mask for? Is something wrong with him? So I was a little bit concerned about that, about these weird looks from people. But interestingly enough, I didn't get any. In fact, what was really odd is that two separate people came up to me and said, hey, you know what? Hey, excuse me. I really like your mask. Where'd you get it? So I told them, got it on Amazon and, you know, just kind of looked for the various masks. I showed them, I pulled up the Amazon app. I showed them which one it was. So I think that maybe I may start making a habit of it from here on in. Because when I'm sitting in this contained environment, really close to other people, who knows what they have? And when you know, maybe there's an illness, maybe there's a start of something, maybe they have a cold, maybe not worrying about necessarily a major virus that could be life-threatening, but I don't need to get a cold or a cough or a flu. It kind of makes sense. And it really wasn't a big deal to wear it. I mean, at first it was like hot. I had to get used to it. You know, I went through that first 20 minutes of, oh man, this is hot. I'm just breathing in my face and it's just, you know, this hot air is coming back at me. But after a little while, I got used to it and it was pretty easy. So, yeah, I just thought I'd let you know about that. You know, me and my germs, I'm not a germaphobe. I'm not really one that, but I'm not a friend of the germ either. just seems to be keep yours to yourself. I'll keep mine to myself. Now, whether or not the mask works or not in this circumstance for this coronavirus, I have no idea. Some scientists coming out and saying that means nothing. You just got to wash your hands, make sure you don't have contact. But we don't really know at this point. So I said, I'm not taking any chances. And it worked out pretty well. Stuffed it into my backpack for the next time into a certain compartment. So the next time I need it when I travel, just whip it right out, put it on, good to go. The problem, of course, is what happens if you want to eat or drink? Well, you got to take it off. So it's a bit of a problem there, but okay, whatever. So with that, I thought we would dive right into what's happening now. I mean, we ended the show last week with thoughts on the outbreak and the spread of this coronavirus. And, you know, it was in the context that there's a lot of things happening with the markets that look to be positive, particularly the rally that's been going on and other headwinds are not there. And we've seen that earnings are starting to come out that are looking pretty good. And at that point, last week, really nothing seemed to be able to derail this market run. Everything changed in an instant this week. Because now we're finding that this coronavirus is not only in China, and not only that, it's now found in every province in China. Obviously, the center of it, where it is originally located and emanating from, has a lot more, but it's starting to spread, and we have several in the United States and around the world. I think over the weekend, there was 12,000 infections, and possibly some are speculating upwards of 100,000 that may actually have it right now. And there's of course, you know, a few hundred deaths from this at this stage. 8 cases have been reported in the United States, some from human-to-human contact, some from showing up in people that have not ever been to China in this recent, well, not ever, but recently. And we see that there are flight bans to and from China that are now in effect from major airlines across the globe, as well as many countries are issuing statements, warnings, prohibitions, and edicts that no travel in, no travel out. And if you do come from there, there's a mandatory 14-day quarantine period for certain countries. So there's a lot that's really changed in the last week. As a matter of fact, the World Health Organization came out with a statement and put a, the award of, this is a global issue. This is now upgraded to a concerning factor around the world. And what this really means is, I mean, if you think about the flight bans in and out of China, and you think about the fact that the Lunar New Year holiday in China and this break that they had that was going to be ending next week, I guess, has been extended to February 13th, at least. So this means that businesses will be closed at least until that period. And we're talking about a lot of manufacturing, a tremendous amount of revenue lost that will never return. Now, in some areas, of course, well, you know, people have to buy staples. So if they're not going out and buying staples at this point, maybe what they'll do is double up on it in the next number of weeks when this thing, and if this thing dies down. I'm not making any predictions on how this is going to spread, where it's going to spread. Let's just stick to the facts of what we have right now, and it's not good right now. But some of it will be temporary and some of it will be forever lost. You know, people are not going to go out to a restaurant and eat if it's closed. That restaurant will never get back their money. People are not going to go and double up and buy double the meals in the restaurant after this thing dies down or when the restaurants reopen. That's not going to happen. Again, staples may be a little bit different. Manufacturing may, in fact, double up in their capacity. So this two-week longer period that Chinese firms are closed throughout certain areas and provinces in China is a very serious matter. And that's why starting on Monday, we saw the market drop about 450 points, and then it kind of kicked back up when there was some better news, or at least not as bad news. And then throughout the week, it was jumpy until we saw, of course, that there was the WHO announcement on the heels of President Trump and the United States saying, hey, you know what? This is a global problem and it's a major problem. And the airlines starting to shut down and all the outside influences that really came into play on Thursday into Friday, and not to mention the expansion and very quickly increasing level of infection and transmission. So what we have is a major shutdown of business in China. And really, if you think about what this is, it's if there could have been a time, well, this is not it. Probably one of the worst times we've had in terms of where it lies in the year and where it lies in the history of where China is. Because we already have China slowing down remarkably due to the fact that we are in a trade war. Whether or not you want to believe that the recent trade deal and that skinny partial phase one trade deal did anything but just cool down the major simmering of what was happening, for the most part, all the tariffs are still on. Nothing has really changed since we signed that trade deal, except for we have a cooling off period, which lifted the spirits of a lot of people saying, well, maybe we'll get something done. Maybe we'll reach a resolution. Maybe eventually we're closer to than further away from tariffs coming off. So that's really what happened on that front, why we did see a nice spark to the markets after that happened. But with all these tariffs, with the slowdown already in China that we've been seeing over the last couple of years, with the Hong Kong situation and protests that have essentially shut down Hong Kong, and now a time of year when China is known to have incredible amounts of spending, it'd be kind of like, even though a lot of businesses are closed during this period, a lot of people go out and travel, and to neighboring countries like Japan, which sees a tremendous amount of travelers from China during this time of year, and Macau, which oftentimes gets a massive amount of their revenue during this period. And the casinos are seeing a significant downturn already, projecting major amounts of decrease in revenues from operations. You take Wynn, Las Vegas Sands as two examples and look at their stocks. Coming at a really bad time where, yes, there were some closings, but those closings allowed people to go on vacations and now they can't. Allowed people, and during this time of year, to spend, and they can't. And now you have the potential for a further drop in activity that will result in anywhere from, I don't know, 1 to 1.5% drop in GDP for the next year. As a matter of fact, we're seeing that the Chinese markets, which have been closed for the most part during this entire mini season of virus, are scheduled to reopen on Monday. And if you take a look at the ETFs that trade in the U.S. that are related to China, they're indicating somewhere, depending on which one you look at, anywhere from a 5 to a 10% drop in China's markets, whether it happens exactly on the open or throughout the day or the week. They're looking at a 5 to 10% estimated transmitted, if you will, drop on the Chinese markets. And I would expect, because they've talked about it already, coming into this weekend, into Sunday, in particular Sunday, there'll be a lot of talk out of the Chinese government about their supportive mechanisms, their desire to make sure that markets will function, creating excessive amounts of liquidity, injecting all sorts of stimulus, possibly making another change to their reserve rate requirement, possibly cutting interest rates, possibly moving the currency. And probably this is going to happen all starting on Sunday because they want to get ahead of the market open on Monday morning China time and creating this liquidity and injection support. But it really is still a wild card on how markets are going to react because, yeah, again, you have all these shutdowns, businesses are closed, people are maybe not ready to be too happy over there, and there could be some major moves, and I expect there to be so. Now, with that, you know, is it time to, you know, get right in? Well, historically, we could look at other times when we saw similar conditions, and I've seen several different reports out that look at the MERS and SARS and Ebola and kind of go down the list of various pandemic concerns and worries that happened in the past. And we've seen U.S. markets drop anywhere from 3 to 8 or 9% on these kinds of concerns. And of course, in China, when we had the bird flu or, you know, pick whatever particular outbreak that we're looking at, their markets drop pretty significantly as well. And usually there's this nasty impact on markets and it lasts for a while and then they subside. And they subside and they start to get a little bit of a relief when we see the transmission rate dropping, where the geometric levels of infections start either leveling off or dropping. Or maybe if there's a cure, and you've been hearing a lot about that, right? Every day we hear one or so biotech company coming out with, hey, we're working on this, and the stock goes up like 50%. Next day it's like, well, we don't have it yet. Stock goes down 40%. So you got to be careful about the news, whether it's a pump and dump scheme or whether or not it's something that's, you know, real, something we could really hang our hat on. But the problem with this particular virus with regard to the transmission rate is that from what I understand and from what I've been reading about and what I've been seeing in not only in health-related news items, but also in the financial area, is that this virus can be transmitted from person to person potentially without the original host showing any signs. So no fever, no cold, no sniffles, no aches and pains. Nothing has to be really in there. In other words, the incubation period, I think, is upwards of, I don't know, is it 10 to 14 days of this? So let's say the first 5 days you have this inside and you've gotten this and you're infected and you don't have any signs at all of anything that would make you believe that, well, you have anything wrong with you. But you come into contact with somebody else at that point, you shake their hand, you sneeze on them, I don't know, whatever happens, okay? Whatever happens that you somehow get them infected as well without your knowing that you even had the virus to begin with. Therefore, people will have their defenses very low. So if you thought you had a cold or the flu or a fever, you'd probably stay home, wouldn't participate in activities. But if you didn't know anything, you're out there doing your thing, not even thinking about, well, maybe I have something wrong with me. Maybe I shouldn't shake hands with somebody. Maybe I don't have to do the old elbow shake or the fist pump. And the other party doesn't think anything either, therefore then takes it and spreads it all over themselves and they get sick and the transmission status notches up one and the next party that's infected has a 4 or 5 day lag until they're showing signs and didn't know anything either. And they're along their merry way handing out the virus for free to everybody without their knowledge. And that's why we may see a very steep curve to the infection rate in the short term. Because a lot of people didn't know in the beginning they had anything wrong with them. So I think this is an issue and I think the concern really comes from there. And I think you're probably asking, well, Andrew, what does this have to do with our markets? We only have, you know, less than a dozen people that we know of right now that are infected. Most of those came from the area in China that was a problem. And, you know, is this a pandemic really, or is this more an isolated case in China that spread out to the peripheral countries in the nearby area and regions? Or is this something that's going to cause, you know, the next Spanish flu where millions of people are infected and die? I don't think it's that like that. I don't think it's going to be like that. I don't think it could be like that. I mean, back then there wasn't the communications, the understanding. You know, you wouldn't have known about this for months later by the time it actually got here. And then, you know, we didn't have the technology in the biotech area and the healthcare area and the drugs to fight and combat these kind of things. So unless something really is odd and different about this, it would seem like eventually we're going to find a cure or we're going to have enough containment that it will at least subside. And what's interesting is At the start of the year, I laid out some of my thoughts on what to watch for in 2020. And one thing was, and I laid it out, I talked about this a few weeks ago, is that I believe there was going to be a correction in the first half of the year based on valuations, that valuations have gotten so far ahead of themselves, even with the earnings coming in a decent clip, that the valuations are more reflective on very low interest rates rather than necessarily an earnings growth. And therefore, what we saw was a multiple expansion. The PEG ratio hit that 1.8%, 1.8. And I said, you know, I was very clear. I said, there's going to be a pullback here. Now, you may say, well, of course, there's going to be a pullback. There's always a pullback. But it seemed much more likely that things really got ahead of themselves. And wow. We get this outbreak here, and whether or not this is the catalyst or not is still, you know, we have to think about that. But there was a good amount of froth built into the market that needed to come out. So if this was the thing, if this was the spark that woke people up to, hey, you know what? There's things that go on around the world. There's a slowdown throughout the world and even in the U.S., because maybe it's just an excuse. Maybe it's just the excuse that they're using right now. And there was a desire, but nobody was willing to pull the trigger. But now it's like, you know what? Here's something. Let's wake up to where valuations are and realize that these have gotten so far ahead of reality, no matter how low interest rates go at this point, that earnings can't keep on being stagnant and prices keep going up in the markets. So maybe it is. Maybe this was the issue. And the real issue is that even if, again, there isn't much happening here in the U.S. and maybe a few cases over in Europe and maybe a dozen or so cases in Africa, the problem is that if China stays shut down, that's going to impact all of us and the world economies. There's no question about that. Already the suggestions that possibly upwards of 1 to 1.5% of GDP from China is going to be sliced right off due to what's going on right now and this lockdown in the various provinces and the potential containment requirements that are going on. And more importantly, the fact that the rest of the world is saying, hey, you know what? We're not going to China. We're not flying in. We're not flying out. Nothing's coming in. People aren't going to go in and out. Business is shut down. One of the interesting things, side note here, and I'll just mention it now, I'm thinking, you know, where would this really benefit something? Well, we know the airlines are a problem. We know that, you know, certain trade is an issue. Think about one of the greatest potential, maybe short-lived, but benefactors of this is a company like Zoom Media, where instead of doing meetings personally, you could simply have a virtual meeting where you have video and sharing of, you know, desktops and PowerPoint or presentations with multiple people. And you could do it with Skype too and all, and that's part of Microsoft and Microsoft Teams, but Zoom Media. Did you notice that the stock was up on this? I mean, I think people are looking for this idea of, yeah, where can we invest in a world where there's going to be this containment and where we have to have meetings, but I can't get there. We know the internet doesn't get the flu necessarily. That will stay up. Well, in that case, of course, the communication, the old-fashioned phone can work just fine. I get that. But having broad-based meetings, maybe if you want to have a boardroom meeting and you want to have people meet, but you can't, you have each one of them hook up into a particular meeting and do it virtually. So that's probably the reason why Zoom was up last week. Anyway, I digress on that. So 1.1% to 1.5% of China's GDP is looking like it's going to be sliced off. And it looks like, from every indication that I'm getting, that about 0.5% may be cut from GDP of the U.S. due to an elongated positioning of having difficulty getting products and getting people moving in and out of China. And because of not only that, because also the slowdown in China will then have reverberations into the rest of the world, et cetera. Now, what's also you have to add to that is the fact that there's been a lot of talk about, well, how much is the Boeing 737 MAX situation and the shutdown of production going to have on the U.S. economy? And that's also being, at this point, is being modeled at about 0.5%, half a percent of GDP. So you add those two together, and now we just sliced off 1% of GDP over the next year. So we're going to go from a 2 to maybe a 1. That's assuming, almost in a weird way, that's a best case scenario. That's assuming that the Boeing situation gets resolved and they start producing and all that into, let's say, we'll say June, May or June of this year. And let's say that this whole entire virus is, well, let's give it to March, which is a long time, by the way. But let's give it to March. If it resolves at that point, I think this is where the calculations are coming from and the modeling is being done with regard to a 1% chop of GDP over the next year for the United States. And you can see all this reflected, by the way, in commodity pricing. Commodities were obliterated last week. The hard metals, or I should say the industrial metals, not gold, but the industrial metals and oil sank. It's probably a reasonable move considering the fact that these are very much tied to China's economy and output and manufacturing. But I think this is really kind of something that we really need to consider, that, you know, commodities selling off at the way they have is, of course, disinflationary as well. And that's something the Fed's going to watch. And I am certain that after the Fed came out last week and talked about how they're going to continue with their open market, or their permanent open market operations in the repo market, that's not QE. Again, I can hardly say that without laughing, that it's not QE, but that they say is not QE will continue. They're going to push it now till April. And yes, there was a lot of questions for the Fed, for Jay Powell, regarding the coronavirus, really focusing in on, you know, what does this really mean to us? How is this going to impact you? And what is the Fed going to do about it? And they did not change rates last week, but they did continue to say that they were going to have a, this is on Wednesday, have, they envisioned a continuation of these open market operations to keep liquidity and required liquidity at their $1.5 trillion money on hand by, on hold by the Treasury. And bonds reacted actually pretty poorly to that. Markets didn't do badly, but bonds didn't really react. As a matter of fact, rates started rising a little bit. But by the end of the week, check this out. The 2-year Treasury is now yielding 1.3%. And that's down from 1.6% at the start of the year. Lowest since 2017. The lowest 2-year yield since 2017. So all of that wondrous things that happened with the economy that should have been really boosting up the opportunity for our bonds to gain, and the idea that things were going well and the strength of our economy, totally reversed. And a lot of that has to do with the Fed and what they did, that pivot back in, we'll call it January of 2019. The 10-year U.S. Treasury is now yielding 1.5%. That's down from 1.8%. And listen to this, the 30-year bond, the long bond, is now sub 2% once again. That's an amazing run for bonds just this year. Just this, when I talk about this year, I mean in the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Just an incredible move on bonds. And what we have is, well, people are taking risk off, looking for other options. Where can they put their money? Do they want to put it in real estate? Maybe. Commodities, it's a good diversifier, but right now, not looking so hot. They want to put it in stocks? Well, not really with these valuations as they are. So where are they going to go? Cash? What are you going to get on cash? 1.5%? Not too bad. Better than the 2-year, frankly. Better than the 10-year. But still a big problem. So they're going to go into bonds thinking that the Fed is going to continue on with their operations and making sure the interest rates stay low. And then following along the rest of the world, there is really no other place because you have negative interest rates in other places. So you might as well invest in U.S. bonds as the only place with the economy that is one of the most solid, if not the best, in the entire world. Now, when you watch the pricing of what happened last week, there were some really interesting plays that you could have really picked up on. So last Monday and Friday, the markets closed down. What, the Dow was down 450 points or so. The NASDAQ didn't do terribly, but didn't hold up well. Small caps still getting hurt. Friday, 620 points or so on the Dow. The NASDAQ was down about 4% or so on Friday. It would have been down over 2% if Amazon didn't have that incredible earnings number that came in on Thursday night, pushed the stock up about 7%. The NASDAQ Qs, the NASDAQ 100, if you look at that, there is a 9% position held by Amazon. So you just do some quick calculations and you figure, well, Amazon was up, let's just say it was up 10%. If it was, that's 90 basis points. I think it was only up, probably added about 65 basis points actually by the end of the day on Friday. But added 65 basis points on a tape that was down 1.4. You got to kind of push that up. If it wasn't for Amazon, you have a 2% down day on Friday for the NASDAQ. So the wind came out of the sails on a lot of these, you know, heavy-duty go-go growth names, something we've been talking about that have been overextended by a long shot for a long time. So the other thing that you saw was we're starting to see some flushing going on. And what I mean by flushing is when you see prices go from, I'll pick a number, you know, $40 down to $25 during the day, and then can maybe come back up a little bit on a quick flush. A lot of stocks saw that on Friday in particular. One of the ones I wanted you to look at, if you look at a chart, for example, is Luckin Coffee. Now, this is the Starbucks of China, so you would envision that, you know what, if there are these closures, if there is this containment, if there is this slowdown, if there is this elongation of the holiday and people are not going out, not buying coffee, not doing the things, well, Luckin Coffee would get hit. This is a stock that had just an absolutely beautiful, beautiful run from its IPO. And then on January 17th, peaked at 50. So we're, you know, up 300% from the IPO. And then this unbelievable run came to a halt over the last couple of weeks or so. Friday, it flushed down to 26. So it was at about 34. Flushed from about 11 a.m. to 12:30, down consistently, down to 26. Climbed back up and closed at $32 a share. What I'm sharing with this to you, and why I'm sharing this with you, is because if you look at the opportunities that could be coming forth when there is, I guess the best way to describe it is blood in the streets. When people are panicking and freaking out over things, maybe rightfully or not so rightfully, there are opportunities. Now, am I saying that, you know, hey, you know what? Just go out and buy in both hands if things drop. No. What I want to talk to you about is there are going to be these opportunities that are uncovered, and it's time for you to just spend a few minutes and dust off that watch list. Because it was really, you know, if you look at what's happened over, you know, throughout 2019, those watch list ideas were great, but really not a lot of opportunity to find when they break down very significantly and to invest because it was a constant creep higher. There was a few here and there, but generally speaking, when I'm talking about these watch lists are to find those ones that are fundamentally strong, those companies that have been, you know, really doing well for a long period of time and maybe due to a situational upheaval in markets that you'll be able to find those stocks at a great price. And one of the things you do with watch lists are you do your research, whether it's fundamental or technical, or I prefer a combination of the two, and you find those stocks where you say that, you know what, there was a breakout above this level, it rode up a little bit too high, let's see if we can get back to where it is fundamentally sound, where maybe our PEG ratio, our PE ratios, our fundamentals all those things line up and the price gets to a level that, hey, I'm willing to buy it at that price. And by doing so, you're prepared. You're ready to go in the event that there is a breakdown. And if, in fact, you wanted to buy Luckin shares and you were saying, oh, you know, it's too high. Price has gotten away from me. And if you didn't look back at it and have that on a watch list and maybe put an alert at it, say, you know what? Maybe if this thing breaks down to the $25 level or whatever number from where it was at 50, that's a 50% retracement of price. Pretty significant. Now, whether or not Luckin is worth that price now or not, whether it is worth $50 or $100 or really worth $12, not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about finding if that is something that you're willing to buy in, finding where those prices come down in these kind of environments where there is a lot of volatility in the markets, a lot of uncertainty, and you get a real, we'll call it a deal. Stocks go on sale because they do that from time to time. Something we didn't see. The problem is you need to have a plan because oftentimes what happens is that you have this plan. And simple enough, say, you know what? I'm going to look for opportunities. If the markets come down, if stocks come down, I'm going to buy into, let's just use an index. I'm going to buy into the S&P 500 if it drops 5% or 10%, whatever number you look at. And then, well, there you are. It's down 5%. And what do you say to yourself? You know what? I think it's coming down more. So comes down, it's down 6%, 7%. Okay, you were smart. You were great. Genius. You didn't do anything right there. But now it's down 7% below your 5% level that you said that you were willing to buy in at. You say, you know what? It's going down. It doesn't go down. It stops right there. And then it starts moving higher. And now you're like, you know what? I still think it has more to go on the downside. You've said this to yourself before, right? This is not something you haven't heard before. I'm just expressing probably what you've said to yourself during times when markets correct. It's going to get worse. And it may. But you got to pick your points, what you're willing to get in, and then set some stops where you're saying, you know what? I'm not going to hold beyond that. If it does come down 10% and that was your target price on where you wanted to buy and it starts going a little bit lower, is that still a level that you felt was reasonable to invest in? Or are you going to break your plan? Because you didn't have a plan that was solid, written down. When markets flush and markets move wildly and individual stocks take a hit and you have your plan set out, I'm telling you, there's an opportunity there. Now, remember something. I mean, let's talk about this. Unless you're day trading or swing trading, we're not talking about that. We're talking about investing for the future. And whether I talk about stocks or ETFs or mutual funds or sectors or indices or areas, I'll be honest, I picked up a little bit of China late in the day, towards the end of the day for on Friday. The reason being, the thesis was, you know what, we're down 10% without knowing really what's going to happen. I believe there's going to be a significant amount of, as I mentioned earlier, talk about liquidity, stimulus, holding up the markets, making sure things work smoothly and operationally. And I think the markets in China have dropped significantly enough, even before this, to warrant a reasonable amount of opportunity moving forward. So we picked up some shares of the CSI 300 index. I looked at also the Hong Kong index and said, you know what? It may get a little bit worse from here, but you know what? We could dip our toes into this point, get a little bit of a positioning in there. And then maybe add to it on the way down if, in fact, it looks like it still has a little bit more room to run. And then have a clear stop-out point below where you say, you know what, if it goes under this, I'm going to sit on the sideline and see how it plays out. But you have to have a plan. You have to have a plan. And this is where the opportunities start to open up in this kind of situation when you have a long-term time horizon or even a midterm. Let's say it's 6 months, 3 months, a year. I'm not talking again about scalp trading. I'm talking about a little bit of a longer term time horizon. You got to take those opportunities when they're presented to you. If you're going to be like, hey, you know, I got cash. I'm waiting for the market to drop. And then you find yourself never willing to get in. What was the point? Are you happy? Oh, look at me. Oh, I'm all in cash here. And you know what? You guys are losing money. Yeah, you know what, though? They made a lot of money over the last 3 years. You're sitting in cash. maybe not so smart. You got to be in it to win it. Let's get that way straight, and let's talk about something else. I am not here, Mr. Bullish. You know that. I am not always telling you, but you know what? I'm not always telling you, hey, get into the market, get into the market. There are definitely times to and not to. What I'm telling you right now is just be aware that I believe this is situational. It may run its course, and of course, we have other things that are coming into the headlines right now. Who is going to be in the lead for the presidential election and who looks like it's going to get in or not, and all those other things that go along with this and the potential for slow down the economy. I get all that. I'm just saying that you have to use these times to recognize that a plan of action to be in or out of the market, by the way, this goes to also being out of the market. If in fact you made some great profits moving forward and you know what, stocks went parabolic for a little while there and you think that maybe, just maybe you should take some off the top, but you don't, this is the opposite of what we just talked about. But you don't because you're like, well, you know what, it can still keep going and I don't want to miss out on anything. Nothing wrong with taking a profit. No one ever went broke taking a profit. So do yourself a favor. If it's nothing more than just a, don't call it profit taking. Let's reposition for you, this for you mentally. Let's call it rebalancing. Rebalancing your portfolio. Very smart thing to do. Find those stocks that you made a lot of money on, take some off the top, maybe roll some money into other sectors. And when I say stocks, I'm talking generally, again, very generally. Talking about whether it's a stock, whether it's an ETF, whether it's a particular sector, when there's a good amount of profits that you made there and there's other areas that really haven't done as well, we always do see and have seen, I believe the cycle will be there infinitum, that we'll see a rotation into these various sectors once again. Consider, well, if nothing else, this rebalancing idea, but maybe even a dollar cost averaging plan or buying when panic is in the streets. I mean, these kind of things utilize inside your portfolio. And if you're unable to do it, you have a frank discussion with yourself. Is this something that you can do? Can you objectively, unemotionally make those decisions for yourself with your money, with your retirement, knowing all the things you know about yourself? Objectively, just for a second. Whether you're driving in a car, you're in a train right now, you have a mask on, you're on a plane, wherever you are, if you're laying in bed, if you're asleep, wake up. Can you, and ask yourself, nobody else is listening. Nobody else can hear you. Can you do this objectively for yourself? The answer is no. Go out and find yourself a good investment advisor or financial planner, whatever you want to call them, to help you along with the process. Or maybe put some money in a mutual fund that's broad-based and diversified that will allow you to be at least inside of the playing field as opposed to sitting on the outside bench all the time. And if in fact you do believe, really believe that you can do it for yourself, time to make that watch list, time to consider rebalancing, rotating, and dollar cost averaging both in and out of positions. It's not easy. I mean, again, when markets are coming down, stocks are getting crushed, you're going to have second thoughts when stocks are going up. When your particular position is doing well, you think it's going to go on forever. It's like this nonsense that the economic cycle is broken, when in fact we know that the economic cycle is from peak to trough and recovery and back again. It's just elongated it right now. It's just a longer time period than we've seen in the past. And if I would bet everything that I have, that in 20 years from now, we'll look back and say, wow, that was a great cycle. Can we ever match that again? Because it's going to go from, you know, this peak area to a little bit of a coming down a bit, all the way down to there's going to be a recession in the future. I'm pretty sure about that. But remember, everything cycles. So work your plan, stay focused, and if you can't do it, find somebody that can help you do it. There's no loss of pride in all this. It's all about your security of your financial, I would say your outlook for your future. So make a good decision. It's a good time to do so. I have a question that came in real quickly from Joel. It was a very brief question. But I thought, at least since we've talked about it so many times over the last several months, that maybe it would be something we should just mention. Why not? So Joel says, hey, a quick question, Andrew. He says, what does REPO, R-E-P-O, stand for? So you can just look this up. A repo agreement or a repurchase agreement is what it stands for. It's basically a short-term borrowing, overnight lending for, we'll call them, dealers and banks in government securities. And in the case of what's called a repo, a bank essentially sells the government securities to investors, usually on an overnight basis, and buys them back on the following day slightly higher. In other words, you get some interest on your money. However, the repos that we've been talking about are similar to this. And usually it's done internally in the system just to clear the system on a regular basis. But what's going on right now is more like quantitative easing. It's being so much more than's required being pushed into the system, adding liquidity and these injections. And essentially that is money into the system that trickles down into risk assets. And that's what we've been seeing since last year. That's what the Fed has been doing. Rather than just trying to keep the levels normal to affect the overnight lending markets and making sure those stay firm, they're doing it to a level that's so much more and spreading it out, trying to disguise it as not being quantitative easing to give the idea to the markets that they're doing so very poorly, by the way. The disguise is not working. Just to let you know, Fed,
the disguise is not working for the quantitative easing. You say it's repo, but we know it's quantitative easing. Can you just please let us know that we know that it is quantitative easing?
I mean, you know, there's no question. This is a different kind of operation that they're trying to disguise as simple overnight lending in the repo markets. I think from a technical basis, it is very similar to just a simple repo. But if you did need $400 billion worth of repo transactions to liquefy the markets for the securities dealers, for the banks, to have enough money to run their processes, how are they making so much profits? And why are you letting them buy back all those stocks and increase their dividends? Because something's not right. So good question, Joel. JR, as he goes by, it looks like. You can send me questions if you want over at we go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the Ask Andrew button, and just ask away. I love your comments. Hey, by the way, loving the recent feedback on iTunes and the various podcast directories and podcast portals that you've been posting in terms of your ratings and rankings and your feedback. If you haven't done so already, please do me a favor, go over to, I don't know, wherever you listen. iTunes, a lot of people listen. I think 65% of the people that listen to the show listen on iTunes. Do me a favor, just sign in for a second and give us a quick rating, ranking, feedback, review, whatever you want to call it. Let us know what's going on. I really do appreciate, we got some really good ones lately, and that makes me feel really good that we are doing what we're supposed to be doing here, providing you solid financial information on a weekly basis, education to make you so much more smarter with regard to the market. So what we're looking for. So check that out. Check out all the things that we have to offer on thedisciplinedinvestor.com because, yes, we do manage money. Yes, we do rebalance and rotate and look out for your best interest with regard to investing. And that's something that, well, if you want, if you can't do it, if you ask that question, and it's not something that you think that you are empowered personally to do, that's something that we can help you with. And we have accounts for all sizes. Some people are like, wow, you know, it's only this size. No, we have from $10,000 minimum investment with Investology all the way up to $500,000 minimum for our global allocation. So there's something for everybody out there. And even if you want to just simply get your pinky toe into the water and check out how we do things, Investology is a great solution for you. You ask for it. It's Envestology.com. Investology. Check that out. We're going to end it there. Hopefully you're going to be getting together with some friends and family on a very large screen watching the Super Bowl this weekend. I will be doing so down here in Miami, by the way. And just for those of you who don't know, truth be told, the stadium is closer to Broward County, where I live, than it is to Dade County. Well, it's in Dade County, but down, closer to where I live than Miami. So pretty close to where we are. The place is pretty crowded. The beaches were really crowded this weekend. Fort Lauderdale is bopping with people here to celebrate and to participate in the Super Bowl. Great parties going on. Got the, I'll give you a report next week. My son is going to the Sports Illustrated party at Live at the Fountain Blue. He got an invitation to that, which he calls me up. He says, "Hey, Dad, we got an invitation to the Live party, the Sports Illustrated party." I'm like, "We did?" He goes, "When I say we, I meant me." I'm like, "Oh." So he'll be doing that on Saturday night. Late night party. Going to be really cool. I'll make sure to fill you in on what happens at that party and how cool it was next week when we get together all over again. I want to thank you so much for joining me this week. And make sure to check out all the things. Like I said, follow me on Twitter, Andrew Horowitz. One word on Twitter, just Andrew Horowitz, at Andrew Horowitz. And I'll see you again next week.
Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.